Riders Ready. Der Oldschool BMX Podcast.
Welcome to the Riders Ready podcast in English again today for all the international speaking folks out there that want to understand what we do. Patrick, the host of Riders Ready, asked me to host this again today. To my side, I have Rainer Schadowski from Karlsruhe, a BMX legend in Germany who's supporting us and will be part of this interview, which I love. And then we have the star of the show, and which is Ronnie Sampson, who, and you have to tell me, did I say your last name correctly?
Yes, correct.
Yes. Yeah. Who basically came into the BMX scene from the US, and we'll ask him about that in a minute. So first I want to have Rainer kind of introduce himself. I think people know him, but I do think he's also a legend. He was one of my, we just spoke about it actually, that...
Oh, you did?
There was an age difference.
Yes.
And all the young people always looked up to people that were only a year or 2 years older, mm-hmm. but we looked up to them.
Oh, okay.
And they somehow they acknowledged us, but they weren't really friends. Let's just put it that way. And today we're all kind of, we feel we're all humans and same age. So handing off to Rainer to kind of give a short introduction.
First of all, hey y'all, listeners out there to the Riders Ready podcast here in Eschborn, Germany with Ronnie, Stefan, Stevie B, and Patrick, and myself. Welcome. In English for a change, because we thought, well, international audience, no Deutsch, no German, we better do this in English. Thank you for the introduction, Steve-O, Stevie B. BMX, old school BMX Germany. Ron, when did we first meet in Germany? What year was it? 83?
83.
Okay.
I think it was first one at Rotemark, right?
At Rotemark?
At Rotemark, yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
One of the better tracks
here
in this area.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
I don't know. I think Weiderstadt was a little bit better.
Yeah, but Weiderstadt didn't start till 84, did they?
Yeah, I think it started later.
With their first big race.
Yeah.
But during Rotemark, we still had Darmstadt, which was...
Oh, yeah.
From that
little
level,
track.
If you compare those two, Rudamak was definitely the better
a step
track.
Forward, big time.
I always like the layout of Rotemark, but the problem I had with Rotemark because the first turn was to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That wasn't my strongest.
Yeah, but
I thought you always had a problem with the first jump.
Yeah, the first jump.
Guess what? Most turns are to the left. Most first turns are to the left. Most
are they?
Of them.
I always to the right, but I don't know. Maybe in America, they was always to the right. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give that some thought.
Yeah, we had to compare that one. Yeah.
But that's actually interesting, right?
Yeah.
How did you actually, we know you BMX raced in the U.S.
Yes.
When did you start in the U.S.?
I started in the U.S. in 72. Yeah,
that's
so.
I mean, I started at 72, but my bike was like a Bonanza. Very different.
Yeah, no, I started in 72. A good friend of mine that lived on the backside of us where I grew up at, his name was Ron McClinton, and his father was a motorcycle racer.
Tell us where that was.
Yeah, in Vallejo, California.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so his name was Ron McClinton, and his father was a dirt bike racer, motocross. And he built my first BMX bike.
He built it?
Yeah, it was a Swin.
Okay.
He stretched the frame.
Oh,
he welded a crossbar on the...
So he modified
modified the Swin Sting.
Okay.
And I bought it from a junkyard.
Cool.
It was $3. It was $3. I remember carrying it home.
Mm-hmm.
And we took it to his garage, and he modified it. And then that following week, there was a race in Napa, California.
Napa Valley?
Napa Valley, mm-hmm. California. And he took me there.
Okay.
Didn't know nothing about anything, and I won my first race. I won the first race, and after that, it sort of like developed then.
And that was when 72. You said
that was in 72.
Wow,
that was 72.
That was when BMX was fairly still
it
brand
was just,
new.
It was brand. It was brand
just
new.
Just getting started.
It was brand new. And down in the Northern California, they used to have the BMX races in the middle of a motocross track, you know?
Oh, okay.
And it was pretty much like an intermission thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Napa Valley
so
was
like
the first.
So like cheerleading.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Okay. Just an introduction, yeah. Intermission type thing.
Entertainment for the audience.
Yeah, and we had the pie plates. We had to tape the plates onto the handlebars right, and things right. like that. I don't think we had helmets at one point when we first started.
Rubber band start?
It was a rubber band start.
Flat start or
flat heel? Start?
Flat
no,
start.
Flat
oh,
start.
Right.
Rubber band start.
Uh-huh.
You had the 6-inch cranks.
Right? 4-man start, 6-man, 8-man, 10,
oh, I think it was
12.
I think it was a little bit more than that. I think it was probably everybody. I don't think they really had classes at that point. Just everyone got on the line and
went for it.
You went for it.
Okay.
But again, insane. The race in Napa Valley was more organized, you know? And so they had class categories and
okay.
stuff of that nature. And then after that, it sort of just snowballed. And I started looking forward to every weekend going to a race. And we started racing in Oakland, California. And that's where the legendary...
In 72, how old were you then?
I was 11.
11.
I was
okay,
11
that's
years
a
old.
Good age to
yeah.
get started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I reflected when I said I had a bonanza ratnada at the age of 4. Like, sorry, man.
Yeah.
I did not BMX
yeah.
in 72.
Bonanza rat is kind of like the German Schwinsting.
Yeah.
Yes,
but they had the double... Top two, right?
Yeah, well, most two. Of them did.
And they
yeah.
had the gear shift,
big
right?
shifter, yeah, big shift lever.
I didn't have the yeah. one with the shifter.
CC bar, yeah, banana seat,
the banana,
yeah.
banana
you know, two-piece yeah. bars, high-riser bars.
Yeah. But that was my swing. It had the banana seat.
Oh, sure,
yeah,
sure.
You know?
Of course.
It had the big high-rise bars.
Right,
thing.
Right.
But, yeah.
So when you started in 72, who did you race against?
Any
names that we would know from today?
In 72... Not any of the names that have became big now. I think in 74, that's when the names that we know now in the sports has become more legendary and thing. But in 72, up until 74, you had a shop called Silver Shield.
Silver Shield?
Silver Shield.
They had a race team later on.
They had a race team. I
yes,
think
they
were the
did.
First race team in the Northern California yes. area. And those guys was the legends. You know, you had Jumpin' John Wells, you had Big Mouth Doug Bartling, you had Hank Thomas. I forget some of the names, but they was the legendary. That was the factory team. As
awesome.
You know, you compared them to like Rig Bike Shop
okay.
in the Southern California with
right,
John
right.
Palfreyman, Tom
yes.
Lund, and all those names in that area. So we would go up to Oakland, Lake Merritt, and Merritt College, and we would race. They had a large...
Mm-hmm.
They had a large downhill track.
Okay.
And wooden jumps, you know, it also was a flat rubber band start.
Oh, I see.
And we would go there and race. And then later, you know, fast forward a little bit, when you want to get to the big names, the Pattersons, you know, Brent
fast
Patterson.
Fast forward to when? What year?
74.
74?
74.
Okay.
Used to, you know, Brent Patterson, Stanley Robinson, Larry Ruiz, and then you had Danny Oakley, which
oh.
he was also on the Silver Shield team.
Okay.
So he was probably one of the bigger guys that was known in Northern California and Southern California
uh-huh.
because he was part of the Moose Goose or something like that Mongoose had made, the,
mm-hmm.
the special bike for him.
Right, right.
Yeah, and we started having those guys. I think they was probably the most... When you look at now the legendary names in the sport that came out of Northern California.
Wow.
And then around, you have around 77, then the Andersons start coming more into the sport, you know, Richie Anderson and Ronnie Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time there, Ronnie Anderson, Richie Anderson, they come out of Vallejo, California,
mm-hmm.
and we all knew each other. And then I can't believe I forget John Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
He's also out of Vallejo, California. And then the guy
Didn't Bob Harrell get started around that time, too?
Bob Harrell, I became aware of Bob Harrell in 81 when I was already transitioning, coming over here to Germany.
Oh, okay.
Then I knew about Bob Harrell. I knew he came out of, I think, Fresno, California.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went back to the States a few times, I ran into him, but right. I didn't personally know him. Okay. I just knew of him. I knew.
You didn't know him from the early race days?
No. Okay. And some people had pointed out that when we was in Fresno and Bakersfield, we raced against him. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't aware of it, you know. And I think the classing category was a little bit different then. Mm-hmm. You know? But like I said, Andersons and John Cruz, and then another guy that I grew up with, and we knew each other since we was 4 years old, was Greg Turnage.
Okay.
You know? And with Greg Turnage, we became on a team called Pelican Racing Cycles. And so we was the first sponsored BMX team that came out of Vallejo, California.
V-Town.
And it was myself, Greg Turnage, Ken Brooks, Kenny Brooks, and a young kid named Charlie Venegas, which became a world-class motorcycle rider in speedway bikes.
Nice.
And we were sponsored by Pelican Cycles, and so we would tour around Northern California and racing. And we was pretty dominant back during that era, very dominant.
You know? We're talking about, what, 77, 78 now?
From 74 to, 77. Okay. To 77.
That's still the early days.
That's still the early days, yes. So I come, you can say like a pioneer in the sport, but, yes, you sir. Know.
Absolutely.
From the Northern Cal.
Absolutely.
And then I think the biggest thing I remember when the Northern Cal and Southern Cal became, you know, like a battlefield.
The California Cup.
Yeah. And it was a race that you had to qualify. It was a series of racing that you had to go to and mm-hmm. to qualify. Mm-hmm. And it was myself, Brent Patterson, Larry Ruiz, and I can't remember. They took the top five from every age category, and I forget who the other two riders.
What about
were.
Frank Post?
Frank Post. I didn't know Frank Post until 82.
Okay.
When I went back to the States and I raced him in Roseville, mm-hmm. you know? And he was just coming, I think he was an A pro at the time. He was just coming into the sport and, you know, eventually later became dominant in the sport. But I raced him then in Roseville mm-hmm. a few times. And.
So when did you come? Like, when did you officially come over to Germany then?
I came over to Germany in August of 82.
And when did you start racing?
In Germany?
Yeah.
In 83, when I met Reiner. Yeah. Okay. I think Rotomark was probably my first race. Because and that's interesting because I was in Hanau. I was stationed in Fliegerhorst Concern, and I was downtown and I seen some young kids riding some bike. They had Pro I think it was called Pronex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pronex. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow, you know, they got BMX.
Yeah, that's
here.
A decent bike, too.
Yeah. And they got BMX. So yeah. I asked them if I can check out their bikes.
Right.
And they were a little bit hesitant at the time. But, you know, I said, hey, you know, I raced in the States and this and that. And so I rode their bikes. And at the time, I did a couple of tricks, you know, what they call front wheel endos and curb endos and things like that. And it's like, wow. And so my command of German wasn't at all at that time, and their English wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. So we somehow managed to communicate, and they was telling me about a bike shop in Frankfurt mm-hmm. called Hyos Bike Shop. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, I got to find this bike shop. And
great.
I think it took me a while because we had duties and things like that. So
you joined the military, and then you came to Germany.
I came to Germany, yes. Okay. Yes.
And question. Oh, sorry, yeah, sorry to interrupt you. What happened between like 77 and 82? Was it just military for you, or did you? What was your basic training? Was that in the U.S. or was it over here?
No, my basic training was in the U.S.
Okay.
I entered the military in 81, mm-hmm. and that was after I was racing BMX all the way up until 1980 in the States.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then what happened there? I had a real bad accident.
Oh shit! Yeah.
On the bike.
Oh, no. Yeah.
What happened?
And it was a test bike. It was a pro. It was called ProStar. Mm-hmm. And I was testing the ProStar. I'm not sure if I was testing it. It was a bike that they gave me to ride. You know. Mm-hmm. And I put it together that night. And the next day, I put it together. No, it was on a Thursday night. I remember because mm-hmm. we normally have practice on Wednesdays. At the Vallejo Power Track. And I put the bike together that Thursday, and then I was going to race it that Saturday, and it broke.
It broke?
Yeah.
It broke in half?
It broke right at the head gusset.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
at the worst spot.
At the worst time, and I was going over to what they call a step jump on the Vallejo track, and you know, showing off, they had some magazine coverage there, and the bike broke. It's pretty much just in air. The front part came off, you know,
wow,
and crashed. And I still have the mark there where the when I fell, the bike sort of like stabbed me to the side. You know?
Oh, you got hurt real bad?
Yeah, I got hurt real bad. And that was pretty much the end of my career, you can say, at that point, racing BMX.
For the time being.
For the time being. Because, you know, my mom was really upset with it. You know, say, hey,
yeah,
this is
imagine.
A dangerous sport.
And, it is.
Yeah.
My mom still says that today.
Yeah, still. So, yeah, and then that was it. I was in the hospital for maybe about 4 or 5 days. And the story on that... Brian Patterson, Vance Patterson's father, came to visit me there at the hospital, you know.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, and the relationship I had with the
Vance is an awesome guy.
Yeah, Vance is a very awesome guy. And the thing, Brent and I used to race against each other a lot of times.
Right.
And it was never, you know, Vance was, I could hear him cheering for me just as much as he cheered for for Brent, you know. I think Brent and I, we had some good competitive races, you know. Yeah. And stuff, and that goes to like when we was at the California Cup.
Again, interruption. Sorry, the California Cup. That was basically South versus North.
North,
correct?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing in Central California. It's basically wineries, freeways,
a garlic field, yeah.
A couple of mountains. Almond fields.
Exactly.
That's about
exactly.
It, right?
Exactly.
So no riders from Central California.
No.
Very little.
It was very little riders from Central California. I think, and then that's why I think what Bob Horwald, he was in the central part of that, you know.
I see.
So, and then you can also say Stanley Robinson was also central, because when you look at it, he was from Bakersfield. Fresno. And you consider that
central,
you know.
Gotcha.
And they had King's Bicycle, King BMX team, the bike shop.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, and that was also a very, very good team, you know. But I think during the earlier part, it was no fact. I think Mongoose was probably the first factory BMX team out. I think they came out before Redline, if I'm not mistaken, you know.
Okay.
And all the other thing was mostly bike shops. It was,
right.
You know? And I think Rig Bike Shop started that. That trend.
The team thing?
The team thing.
Right.
Yeah. Because it went from Rig Bike Shop, but then you had Silver Shield, and then you had Sunshine Bike, you had Pelican.
Kings.
What about Hank and Frank? Did that ever come up? No?
Yeah.
Hank and Frank Bike Shop?
Which bike shop?
Hank and Frank.
Hank and Frank. Yeah, but Hank and Frank, I don't think they was a team. They were just more or less a core sponsor. And if I'm not mistaken, the Patterson brought them more into light, you know.
Just because they're on all Patterson sort of
plates? Yeah, they are on all Patterson thing. And they came out of Hayward, California, and that's where the Patterson was originally. Was Hank and Frank Oakland?
Well, they had several shops.
Yeah. But I think it was the original was...
The main one was Oakland, I believe.
Was it? Okay. Because I was thinking about Hayward. But they sponsored the Patterson, and then the Patterson brought them more to the mainstream.
I see.
Good
deal.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you joined which branch of the military?
I joined the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army, yeah.
And then you were deployed, so you came over here?
No, I was never deployed. I came over here. I did my training in South Carolina, and after I finished my basic training. No, South Carolina, Fort Jackson.
Fort Jackson,
yeah.
Okay.
And they were like, where you want to go? And I said, where can I go? And they say, Germany. I'm like, yeah, Germany. So
woo-hoo.
Didn't hesitate. Yeah. But also, from the day I touched down in Germany, I knew I was not going to leave. You know?
Why is that?
I liked everything, the vibe and everything about Germany. They touched us down at Frankfurt Airport. I walked through the terminals. I walked out to the parking lot. And I was like, wow, this is nice.
In terms of?
Yeah. The Mercedes, the taxis was all Mercedes.
I thought the weather is like, finally bad weather.
It probably started raining right away.
Awesome rain.
Well, you don't come to Germany for the weather, but I'm like, wow, you know, really? Mercedes, you know, okay. The taxis.
Mercedes and beer.
Well, I'm not a beer drinker, but
since we are landing on the cars right now, what was your brand in Germany? Like, what was the Ronnie and not the Ronnie, your brand basically? Who were you?
Who was I?
Yeah, I remember being on the BMX track and you were coming on and I went like, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, because when I was in the States, I had the reputation. I was like, they call me Radical Ron, you know? So I was very, I took chances, you know? I think I was a good jumper. And I was always like, if I'm not in a good position, I would jump over you. I would jump past you.
You mean like kamikaze style?
Yeah. So I thought could be a little bit intimidating and stuff. But I had a bad boy type of attitude, you know? And it goes back to where we grew up at, you know, Vallejo, California. And I was like, well, I only got this weekend to race, so I got to get the best out of it. I got to make the best out of it.
And so you were taking chances.
I was taking a lot of chances. I was taking a lot of chances, and which hurt me on a lot of times, because I had some sponsors that was offered to me, mm-hmm. but they said, oh, you know, you're more of a bad boy type of thing, you know.
Okay.
You know, so I'm like, okay, well.
They didn't sponsor you then? Is that what you're saying?
No, they didn't sponsor
me.
They hesitated. They wouldn't give me a full sponsor. Oh. You know, they'd give me a little something, you know.
Okay, like a co-sponsorship?
Co-sponsor. They gave me some parts. Like I said, when Pro...
Free stuff?
Yeah, when Pro Products came out, you know, I was supposed to be a part of that
Pro
team.
Pro Star.
And I was supposed to be a part of that team. And the guy talked to me, he said, yeah, you have a little bit of attitude problem. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you know, I'm 14, 15 years old. Of course you had an attitude problem, you know. And so he took, it went Danny Oakley, it went Larry Ruiz, and the Scott brother, Alan Scott and Dave Scott. Then they end up being the factory ride for that, you know. But they still gave me some product. I still had the frame and the stuff that they made.
Well, I'll tell you how I experienced your brand the first time.
Yeah.
Is this dude with, you had a dog?
Yeah, my dog.
Pitbull? Yeah. Bull terrier?
It was a bull terrier, yeah.
You had a 944 Porsche?
I had the Porsche, yeah.
And you had your bike in the trunk?
Yeah.
Which I just thought was like, and it was all Patterson.
Yeah.
So obviously that was my brand. Like, I was just never sponsored, but you know, like my love brand, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But that was the way I perceived you as a brand in Germany. Okay. That was my first sort of, okay, this is him. Here he is. In a 944 Porsche with a dog and a bike.
And you were probably like, where is he coming from?
Yeah. Like out of space. Like, seriously. How did you meet him the first time?
Well, you know what? I think I met you at the gate
at
Rittermark. I think you got there early somehow.
You got there early.
And me and my dad, we came in. I pulled up for a practice.
Yeah.
And there's this guy in in full-fledged Patterson gear. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
Huh? What? Where is he coming from?
Yeah.
And then we started talking.
Yeah.
And I had an instant connection to you somehow.
It was instantaneous.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it was all good.
Yeah.
And I think from that point on, we were like on the same level, basically. Yeah. You know? And it's still at this level till day. So it's a good thing. And then you said, well, you told me, I started racing in Northern California. I know these guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, huh? Jesus, okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Because I think in 83... I think sometime before we met, me and my dad, we came back from touring the United States.
Yeah. You know?
And we stayed in Southern California, Northern California. We went to a couple of the races and we met some people there.
Yeah.
So And then you come in.
Yeah.
A month or two after that.
Yeah. That was when how the Patterson thing came about. Like I said, I met these young guys in Hanoi.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh wow, there's BMX racing here.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a phone call, and I called Patterson.
Okay.
And John Cruz answered the phone.
Yeah, he was managing the warehouse at the time.
And I said, hey, John, this is Ron Sampson. He said, oh, wow. You know, we had come. I said, I'm in Germany. I said, they're racing BMX bikes here. What can you do for me? And John Cruz said, no problem. I gave him my address.
And he sent you everything.
Yeah. About a week later, I get to my mailbox, and all this Patterson stuff is there, you know.
John Cruz was in Germany 2 years before you called him.
Yeah,
He was here in 81 with Hayos.
Yeah, okay, that I didn't know.
Promoting Redline.
Yeah, because he was on Redline during that time, yeah. And so he sent me all this stuff, you know. And then I showed up. The Rotomark was the first race. Showed up there.
Awesome.
And I forgot about the Porsche. I had the Porsh.
Yeah, you have
it. It was a 924, by the way.
Yeah, 924. Yeah, 924 turbo, though. Yeah. A little turbo.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Turbo. Okay. Even better still.
Yeah, and then I had that crazy dog. And this girl I met, her brother was breeding the dogs, right?
Oh, okay.
And
puppies.
It was puppies. They were bull terriers, you know. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'll take one.
Did you have the time to actually take care of the dog?
No, I didn't. That's why he was crazy. Yeah. You remember the apartment I had in Earlsey, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, and the thing about it,
God.
I had the apartment was the last house on the street, and the back was a field. So I didn't know nothing about taking care of a dog at the time, you know?
You just left the door open.
Yeah, I just left the door open.
I just said that for fun.
Yeah, no, I left the door open, and the dog would just run out, you know,
attack people. Rabbits?
No, it didn't. Yeah, well, you chase the wildlife, you chase things, and then I come back. The neighbor's like, "Hey, your dog did this. Your dog did that."
Oh, and you're like, "I didn't even know he could do that."
Yeah, you know, and he go through people's trash. You know.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. Okay. So, but eventually, everybody in the neighborhood knew who he was, and his name was Rambo. At that, you know. So, and they would bring. Yeah, and they would bring him home. You know, so.
So everybody took care of him.
Everybody
just a
took
bit,
care of him, yeah.
Except you.
Except for me.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Rambo Ronnie.
Yeah. There you go. But I think when I took him to the race, he was so well behaved. You know, he would just
say. He was cool.
Yeah, he would stay there by the car, you know? And I'm like, okay, you know.
That's a funny story.
Yeah, so.
I completely forgot about that dog.
Yeah, that dog. Because I think Efi came to the house one time and Starsky and them, they came. Mm-hmm. And I think the dog actually attacked Starsky. You remember Starsky?
Of course I do.
Yeah, so we went to go order pizzas, and we come back, and Starsky's in another room. And like,
with the door shut.
Yeah, with the door shut.
Oh, no.
Hey man, awesome. your dog attacked me.
Did he bite him?
I don't think he bite him. He was just growling. I think he's
probably wanted to play.
Just wanted to play, or, you know, he was protecting the house because we all left, and Starsky was the only one there. And he probably like, well, it's just me and you here, you know, and...
Coming back to BMX.
Yeah,
just
sorry
for a second.
About that.
Oh, yeah.
If you compare the BMX scene in the US and your racing with what you then had here in Germany, how would you compare the two?
That's a good question, and I think about that a lot. I think here from my side, on the German side, it was more of a friendship. I didn't see anyone really competitive at the time because, you know, at the point I was older, and then in the States I was a pro rider, and over here I wasn't a pro rider, I was just riding. And I think, like with Reiner, Efi, Ralph, and a lot of guys, it's almost a 40-year time span.
Yeah.
And we talk as if no time has passed between all of that, you know. But, and I like Germany, and I think when I was in the States, it was very, very competitive. Even now, some of the guys, you know, you look at their friends, but at the time we wasn't really friends because you was racing for money. You was racing for position, you know.
You were competitive.
You was very competitive, you know. Mm-hmm. And even with saying that, you know, I always go back to the Patterson because Brent and I, we raced a lot.
You'd go head-to-head?
We'd go head-to-head, but we was friends. But I think because his father was very relatable to us, you know. And right. and Brent Patterson, I think a lot of people don't know, he's a very nice guy. He was a very nice guy, you know. And I think his brother as well, they're very very family-friendly type of people. And, right. But when you lined up at the gate, it was competitive. It was competition.
Well, when the gate drops, the bullshit
yeah,
stops.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple as that.
You know? But I think when we went down to Southern California, then, you know, the Northern Riders, we bonded more together.
Yeah, Southern California is where the real enemies were.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I think Northern Cal didn't get a real lot of
coverage
as the Southern California Riders. And I've been outspoken about that on a lot of BMX websites or groups and things of that nature. So,
looking back at this rivalry from like an independent standpoint from Europe, to me it always appeared like SoCal to NorCal was always like, the show-offs versus the gritty competitors.
Yeah, well, how do I say that? I think all the riders, when you look at the history of the sport, and all the riders that came out of Northern California, they was talented riders. They didn't have to use any type of hype or anything like that, you know. Their stats, you know.
They got down to the basics.
They got down to the basics, you know.
Right.
From my opinion, a lot of the Southern California riders that got coverage and has become the legends of the sport, they was who they was connected with. You know, if you was friends with Greg Hill or Stu Thompson,
right?
You know.
Not to take anything off of their talent.
Yeah.
That's not the point here.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, that was my impression, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree. I agree with that to a certain point.
Yeah, yeah. But all the Northern Cal riders, they were very talented riders, and I don't think a lot of them really got the recognition that they deserve.
Hardly ever did.
Yeah. And I go back to another friend of mine. I always mention his name, and it was Greg Turnage, you mm-hmm. know. He was the top five riders that came out of Northern California, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. He worked with Ronnie Anderson. He worked with Richie Anderson. Mm-hmm. And with... another guy, Thomas, he came also out of Vallejo, California. Thomas Ingram, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. He worked with them. He even sponsored some of those guys. Right. And he's still riding today, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was also a very top pro rider and stuff, you know. He had also products. And but I don't think Northern Cal have gotten the recognition that they deserve, you know.
Never did.
Yeah, and I've always been outspoken about that.
What about, like, rules? Like, if you look at the... Because we always have Bund Deutscher Radfahrer. We have that in this forum every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Sanctions.
So how did you feel about, like, the rules that you would have in California versus what you would have encountered here?
Oh, wow, that's...
Because, I mean, just to be clear, right, we had the whole handlebars are not allowed to be above this size.
The BDR.
You're not allowed to have stickers on your number plate.
Yeah, yeah.
If you jumped, and I know how you jumped, and people were always very fearful to be at the gate next to you, because they always were like, shit, this is not going to go good.
What are you talking about? Getting squirrely and stuff?
No, he would just, like he said earlier, right? Like
kamikaze
style. It is competition. Yeah. If he wasn't in front, he would go through you.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the thing. So there's a lot of things where I go, there's a lot of rules that suddenly happened. I just wanted to see from you, like, how did you perceive that versus the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a good question, because that's how I ended my racing over here in Germany, because the BDR, they sent me a letter.
They sent you a letter?
Yeah, warning me.
Verboten.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They sent me a letter, you know? And so some of the races, I wasn't allowed to go. Did you know? I wasn't allowed to go to some of the tracks, you know? They had the one up there in Remagen. Yeah.
At the Schauf track.
Yeah. And they wouldn't let me go.
But why?
Because they said I was a danger to the sport.
What?
Yeah.
What a bunch of fucking retards.
Yeah, because they didn't like the way I race, and then I was a big advocate. I didn't like the front brake, you know?
I always took it off.
Yeah.
And you're not fucking freestylers.
Yeah.
For the line.
Thank like, you. Oh, no. No need to excuse yourself.
And I told him, I said, hey, I'm a rider from the States. I don't use a front brake. And they would always, you got to have the front brake on. I would go through the inspection. I'll have the front brake on. And then I go to my car and I take it off.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would always disqualify me and always an issue. And so I would get a letter. Hey, Samson, that's it's not allowed.
Okay.
You're in Germany. We are organization, and you know.
I did not know that. Like honestly, I did not know this was a loaded question.
Yeah.
But I love it. Like because I mean, BDR basically they pushed me out of the sport.
Yeah.
Right, and they pushed you out of the sport.
Yeah.
So it's just.
And it was eventually I'm like, well, I can't go nowhere. And I was in Munich. It was a race in Munich. Mm-hmm. And
at the Olympia Stadium.
At the Olympia Stadium, yeah. And they had this, you know, they had this one, I don't know, people that made a jump. And I was just jumping, you know, and I was.
In between races?
In between races, you know. And I was, the jump, they were called the Judd, you know, just 1 foot out.
Right.
And,
one foot tabletop,
doing all kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they came in, they was like, that's dangerous. That's not, you know, trying to do a 360, you know, all. You can't do that. And they wouldn't let me finish
what do you
the
mean
race.
You can't do that.
Yeah. They said it was a jumping too high. It was jumping too crazy, you know, other people there. And I think
we're still talking about in between races.
In between races. And I think what happened was it was a mother and her kid was coming and I'm coming from the side street up to the hill.
Okay.
And right at that time, I think they was walking underneath or something like that. And I did jump over them.
Did you clear them?
I cleared them.
See?
Yeah.
So it's all good then.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like,
what's the problem?
Come yeah.
on. Yeah, I would have cheered you on.
Yeah.
And then another one.
Yeah, people were like, oh, wow. But the guy from the track official was like, oh, that is crazy.
The
you know,
BDR guy?
Yeah. And I already had the reputation, though, with too many Americans racing out there. So I still would have stood out, you know.
That crazy American show.
Yeah.
throw him off the track now. Yeah. Never come back, yeah?
Yeah. And so.
Bunch of retards.
Yeah, and that was, I think, my last race was.
It's just really sad
86,
to hear.
86,
right?
I think it was. 86.
86?
Yeah.
No, I'm really sad to hear. Because, you know, I think that is BMX.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The freedom of being creative in your jumping.
Yeah.
Doing. Like, we would always looked up to everyone, like, California was the lifestyle we always wanted in Germany.
Yeah,
so
you
coming in, vans, the whole thing. Like if you look at how we were set up, that was like the North Star. So you were definitely also one of those idols that I looked up to.
Yeah,
and I always thought like, wow, he's you know really cool rider.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Also, you sold me my first snowboard. You know that. I
Yeah. Oh, really?
You remember?
The Burton snow. Oh, you had.
Yeah, you bought. You sold me that. I bought it.
Oh, okay.
Still have
it
too.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I remember I went to the States. I came back because a friend of mine was like, hey, man, you know about snowboards? And I skateboard a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, not really. Mm-hmm. And then so I had four Burton snowboards, yeah.
Awesome.
And stuff, yeah. Wow, man, that's crazy. But the thing I remember when I knew my time was limited in the sport over here with the BDR is, remember at Rotomark, Tommy came. Mike Miranda came.
Yes.
I think the Hutch team came.
Yes, GT.
And GT, and they let them do a jumping exhibition.
Okay.
Remember?
Right.
And they wouldn't let me do it.
Huh?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
What?
And they was like, no, it's just for the American. I was like, I'm American. And you know,
oh
and
my
Mike
God.
Miranda.
Yes.
But I don't think Tim Judd was there. But Mike Miranda and someone else, they did a jumping exhibition. You know.
Wow.
And I'm like, let me get a part of it. No. It's just for the American teams. And I'm like, well, I'm
only
American.
For the real Americans.
Yeah.
Not for the semi-Americans like you.
Well, it's because you had a German rider's license.
I had a German rider's license, yeah.
And that just, I guess that just limits you to, like, you can go. It's very German, right?
You
have a start and a finish.
Yeah,
you need to
be
the most efficient to get there.
Yeah.
Just don't do anything that's show off.
And the other thing I remember when I got the license, because first it was a little bit of a problem because I was 22 at the time, you know?
Okay.
And I think I was the oldest rider at that point in Germany.
17 plus?
Yeah, 17 plus, yeah. And I was 22 years old.
I never thought about this, but you might be right.
Yeah. And I was telling, I said, well, there was no money for me to race over here. I was like, okay, okay. And then he said, okay, well, you're
yeah, because Superclass didn't start until 86.
86, yeah. Yeah.
That's also if you, like, the competitiveness that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I think that's where it actually changes, right? As soon as you're actually racing and you see that the sport allows you to progress and, yeah. and get into a zone where you could maybe even make a buck or two,
yeah, yeah.
then I think that is a different incentive to kind of go, hey, I'm going to, you know,
yeah, yeah.
be a little more.
Yeah, but Ron already did that in Northern California exactly. For a while when you raced
yeah.
pro, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What were the purses back then in the 70s?
Oh.
What was a good size pro purse?
$200.
For first place or yeah. the purse?
Yeah, that was like the local races. You okay. get $200, $250, you know, sometimes you get $75.
Again, for yeah. first place?
For first place, okay. yeah. But mm-hmm. at that time, it was good money, you know? Yeah. So
oh, sure.
If you... And what happened then, a lot of the, especially like Northern Cal, you can pick the races because, you know, again, the, okay. you know, like the Pattersons and Stanley Robinson, someone that was on the factory team, mm-hmm. they would go to Southern California where you had more bigger races and they was chasing for points.
Right.
But you just stayed in a local thing and they had the pro classes.
When you say
you can make $500, yeah, you okay. can make $500 in a weekend.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
When you say chasing points, who, what sanctioning body was that with? USBA?
No, that was NBA.
NBA?
NBA.
ABA?
It was NBA.
UBR?
I left out, it was just the ABA. I think,
ABA?
Yeah, the NBA. NBA was the biggest thing. And I don't know when the ABA came in. I was already out of US when the ABA mm-hmm. came in. But yeah, it was the NBA. NBA. Yeah.
So not National Basketball Association?
Yeah.
National BMX Association.
No, yeah. we're talking about Ernie and Suzanne
here. Ernie and Suzanne, yeah. So National Bicycle Association. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was probably one of the best organizations.
Oh,
but
yeah.
again, I never raced under the ABA rules.
Oh, you did not?
No. Not that I can remember. I think it was always NBA.
Well, know? NBA was a a West Coast phenomenon.
Yeah.
Mostly
yeah.
California. And
yeah.
as to my knowledge, some Arizona, some Nevada. ABA was nationwide.
Nationwide. I think it started out of Florida, I believe, right?
No. ABA out of Chandler.
Chandler.
Arizona.
Yeah, that's right. Chandler.
NBL
out of Florida. NBL out of Florida, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those things I don't really remember because, like I said...
it's not important.
Yeah. NBA was the last that I raced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ron, I got another question here. Did you ever race out of state? For some, like, for nationals, did you ever race
out of California?
Out of California?
Yeah. No.
Okay. So it was California only?
It was only California. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was up until 81. And then I was over here in Germany. So I think maybe in 83, 84, they started doing more bigger one, like in Tennessee and places
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was already here in in Germany, mm-hmm. you know. And then I always had contact with friends in the States, and like I said, my friend Greg Turnage, and I would try to get with him every year and say, maybe I go to a national. Mm-hmm. But because my military obligations at the time didn't really match, and then, you know.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah. And I started meeting the German Fräuleins.
Oh, yeah. So that's a pretty good excuse.
Yeah, yeah, so I'm like, oh, no, you know. I can't go, you know.
That's all right.
Yeah. And then, you know, the vacation time in Germany versus in the U.S. is a little bit different. So I traveled a lot through Germany. Yeah. I think that was a better experience.
Ron, when we talked before, I think at one point you mentioned how you and your fellow racers got to the races. So tell us again how you made it from V-Town to, say, Las yeah. Vegas.
Yeah, in the back of a El Camino.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. How many guys?
Yeah, we had like maybe like seven
with
bikes,
bicycles,
with bikes,
there.
You know.
That's
the one guy that was driving, he had a dog.
Did
you know?
Stack on top of each other?
I don't know if we stacked on top of it, but somehow we were centromatic. You know, we got the bikes all lined up in there. We had gear, and you know, in the El Camino, it had a bench seat, so three people sat in front, everybody else is in the back, you know?
Because that's quite a ride.
Yeah.
From, say, from NorCal to Las Vegas. That's like, what, a solid 6-7 hours?
At least. But it's not just so much a ride. Just imagine you got, you know, it's like 100 degrees.
Mm-hmm. And an open coach, basically.
Yeah. An open, you know, mm-hmm. an open cab, the open bed. Mm-hmm. And the heat, is, and, you know, mm-hmm. there's always traffic. So, you know, we stand in traffic sometimes for 30, 40 minutes. And you're in the back end of the cars at that time with metal. So the metal get hot and you're back there.
Yeah.
You got semi-burned.
Yeah. And, but it was, I think that's an experience that, you know, the kids of today would never experience. No. And I remember...
The parents wouldn't let them.
Yeah.
Plus it's verboten, yeah?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
In Germany, yes, but even in the U.S. today.
I know.
The parents are so protective.
Of course.
And sometimes, you know, we had, you know, $20, you know, and that got you through the weekend.
Round trip for, like...
Well, that's what you had to race. You had to eat and you had to race. Oh, and I think racing at that time, you know, could have been like $5.
Plus you had to get gas, too.
You had to get gas, and so... I mean, everybody, we were checking, like, well, we all got $20 a piece. Yeah.
So you were kind of like on a budget.
Oh, budget. We learned how to manage. Yeah.
So did you, did you ever run into, say, like a burger joint, run in, eat, and then bail out?
Well, I don't know if we can say that, right? Is there a statute of limitation on any type of...
You can say a lot of time has passed.
Yeah.
You can't even say which.
Yeah, like, you can admit nobody cares today. I can imagine.
Let's put it this way. There's been a few burger places that, you know,
that
came
you
up short.
Owe, that
they came
you still
up short.
Owe money until
this
very day.
Yeah.
I thought so.
And going into a Denny's, you order, eat your food, you know, the bathroom was always towards the door, and... You know, one by
so
one, you leave out.
To the toilet.
Yeah.
The last one's just stupid. If you're sitting there all alone going, I need to check.
You know, so I think everybody, every BMXer have those stories, you know. Especially, when you think about it, we was anywhere, you know, oldest one was like maybe 18, 19. The youngest one we was traveling with sometime maybe 12 years old.
Well, you were all kids.
Yeah, it was all kids and, you know. You say bye to your parents on a Friday night and you don't come back until Sunday.
Don't do no stupid stuff.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I promise.
You know, a couple of times we tanked up and drove off, you know, but yeah.
That was in the day before they had cameras everywhere. And
before they had cameras, yeah.
That
yeah.
wouldn't work today.
The days before the Big Brother.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And it was fun, you know, and those memories that you never forget, you know.
Right.
And those the memories that keeps the friendship together, you know, and all these people we still friends with.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, that's great like just on that note, right? In Germany, they introduced, Wendy's introduced free refills.
Yeah.
Like they were the first to do that.
Yeah.
I think they stopped that like after a couple of weeks because obviously we would always do the same, right? You go, everybody buys a burger and then one buys a drink.
Yeah.
Everybody was using that cup and just refilling like crazy, which is... Yeah, but I think that's just the nature of, like, if you're young and don't have the money, you need to find ways to kind of get
through. Yeah,
you
exploit the
system. Exploit the system, exactly. You know? And it was,
I remember when my buddies and I, when we were racing in the U.S. and we got our driver's license, we would pile up in a station wagon or something, like a Ford LTD.
Yeah.
Country Squire station wagon had to have a V8 though.
Yeah. Oh. Wow.
So we'd pile up and we rented these cars, and I mean, I think, no exaggeration here, we killed 3 or 4 rental cars.
Yeah.
We killed
them.
I personally turned them in, and I told the guy at the return, I told, well, you know, something's odd with the motor. It has a weird noise. It goes clunk clunk clunk, but it still runs.
It still runs. Yeah.
And we just. You know, we trashed those things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
God.
That's the only thing. I have no rental car.
Unimaginable today.
Yeah, I have no rental car stories.
I think we jumped one.
Yeah.
In San Francisco.
Did you always get insurance for it, or did you just kind of risk it?
We just did it. Yeah. I always got, I just got, what you call it? I got the liability.
Liability.
That was mandatory, and that was it.
Yeah.
And we jumped one car in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Ollie knows about this. I got proof.
Yeah.
I got a photo to prove it. And there's this like steep hill, and it's got a 20-foot tabletop, and it goes down at the very same angle on the other end. So,
you talk about on the street that's going down towards Fisherman Wharf. That
I forgot.
Yeah,
downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
Anyway, I put it in first gear, floor it, and I take off doing like 45 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it takes off, and I'm like 3-4 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And it comes down, bam, and the bumper comes off. The front bumper comes off. We just managed to stick it back on, and I turned the car in, and I'm like, you know what? It's weird. The front bumper came up. Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Sorry, sir. We'll take care of that.
No, I know that area, and that's how, you know, people from San Francisco know that there's visitors or there's tourists, because they don't understand that track, or that, not that track, but that hill, mm-hmm. and they driving too fast, and they also
take off,
you know, and I've seen that happen a lot.
Yeah, we did it on purpose.
Yeah, though. Yeah.
As a BMXer, you cannot resist. Yeah, you gotta do it.
Yeah. You have to catch air somewhere.
You have to catch air. Yeah. We had to catch air, even in a rental.
That's crazy.
So, Ronnie, you're still in Germany.
Still in Germany, yes.
How many years in Germany now?
Oh, I don't know if I can calculate, but like since 82 till 2025.
Yeah.
So after BMX, since you stayed in Germany, what happened? What's your life?
After BMX, okay, you want the long story or the short story? So
I just want to hear who you are and what you did, man.
Okay, so after BMX, I stopped racing, I think, in 86, and also I got out of the military in 86. I worked for a brokerage company for a while. Then I got out of the brokerage company, and then my biggest success was my brother and I, we started a production company.
Is he here now, too?
No, he passed away. And it was called Brothers in Germany. It was a production company, and
But not Milli Vanilli.
No, not Milli Vanilli. You know, we had people that actually sung, you know, but going there, we knew the original singers behind Milli Vanilli. But, and we started doing hip hop parties and music. And we worked with a lot of German top artists that were, you know, Americans that became, you know, chart toppers in Germany. And we did a lot of events in Germany, and we did that from 92 up until 2004. Yeah. And that was a big success. But then, with any business, when you start with family, it becomes a problem. And then in 2005, we ended it, and I went back to the States in 2006. And
visiting?
I got married. And we wanted to try to live in the States for a little bit. So I went back to my hometown, Vallejo, California, for 3 years. And it changed. And I was more, I didn't realize how European I was until I went to the States. I'm like, well, I need to come back to Germany. So came back to Germany in 2009 and been here since, you know, so. Had a little break, but Germany, I always considered Germany my home.
Really?
Germany would always be my home. I like everything about Europe.
Cool.
Yeah. So I don't see myself leaving anytime soon. Mm-hmm. No.
Speaking of leaving.
Yeah.
I've been trying to drag you to Frogtown for a long time. He's laughing.
Yeah. Everybody.
How about it?
Everybody has been trying to.
Let's go.
Yeah, eventually I have to go. September is always a crucial month for me.
No, September is a good time to get out of Dodge.
Yeah. But
it's a good time to leave.
Every year something happens, you know, and I have other obligations.
Excuses.
It could be excuse, but I have to make it there. But, you know, on the other side,
it's only for a week.
It's only for a week, yeah.
But I think we could make it a few days.
Yeah, I think if I'm gonna go to Frogtown, I can't let anyone know, because all the stuff that I've on a lot of these BMX groups, I think I then got some enemies. So they might
enemies.
They might be waiting for me there. You know,
like stab you. throw rocks at you?
Well,
shoot you?
I had a couple of legends say they were actually going to punch me.
So what did
please
you say?
Explain.
Exactly?
Yeah.
Please
yeah.
explain.
Well, on the on the internet, I have my screen name is NorthCal Rider, right? And so I've been always very verbal about the difference in Southern California and Northern California riders. And like we always talked about, I don't think Northern Cal got the coverage that they needed, you know? And it was with Eric Carter, Mike Miranda, they have a podcast. And I'm always very critical on the interviews they give. I'm always very critical every year about the nominations from the BMX Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And yeah, pretty much those things. And
but it's not like you're afraid, are you?
No, see? Not afraid. Definitely not afraid.
Well,
but I just think when you go to an event like that, you don't want to have no conflict, right?
No, but if
that's
you go
not gonna
now,
happen.
You know, I'll join.
Happen.
You'll join? Okay. Yeah, so we take the, you know, the German mafia with me, right?
Yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah. You call no me the German mafia.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really intimidating. Like, people who know me, they know my size.
Hey,
and everything, they go like, wow.
Not
careful,
supposed,
here he comes.
Yeah, you know, we go there. We only speak German. You know, we have that deep German, Bavarian type accent.
Jawohl, mein Herr.
Yeah, natürlich, yeah. We go with the dark Ray-Ban glasses. And, you know, we get T-shirts made, German Mafia.
Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe that.
German Mafia BMX.
Yeah, so I bring my security, my bodyguards. Yeah.
So let's not get sidetracked.
Yeah.
What about Frogtown?
I don't know. I have to think about it.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what.
This year is definitely not going to happen.
What's that?
This year won't happen.
No?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Are you going?
I'm seriously considering it.
You going to go this year?
Like,
yeah.
I'm more than considering. I'm like 99%
really?
There.
Because my family and I will be in the U.S. anyway. Texas,
yeah,
and it's not so far off. I'll just hop on a plane a couple hours.
Well, see, you
the
know,
thing is, look here.
I'm offering you. Yeah.
I'm offering you. If you supply the plane ticket, I'll come pick you up at the airport. I'll pay for everything. You just pay for the plane ticket.
Yeah, plane ticket getting there, that's not a problem.
See?
You know, you don't have to do any of that. I have to talk to my friend Greg, and
well, he'll be in for it.
Yeah, but. If he makes, because every year we try to plan it, because I would like to see Greg,
I would like
to see Patterson's, you know, Ronnie Anderson.
Yeah, we'll take care of that.
Yeah.
I'll pay for your trip, except for the plane tickets.
No,
you'll take care of the tickets, yeah. I'll pay for everything
The
else.
Ticket's not a problem. My wife works for Lufthansa, so I'm good on that.
Oh, yeah. She works for Lufthansa?
Yeah, yeah.
Can she get me a ticket?
Yeah.
That you can't do anymore, but yeah, tickets are not a problem.
Okay.
So it's never been a problem getting
so
a ticket.
So give it some thought.
Yeah. I have to call Greg this weekend and see what his plans are, but...
I think it would be great.
It would be.
Even if we connect there and just do like a little recap of sort of, put this on tape, that would be awesome.
Right, right.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. And what day is it? Like the...
It should be on September 11th, 12th, and 13th,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. Cause they just recently had the Dirty Fest, right? The Dirty Fest in Northern or Southern California is growing in popularity
it's
too,
Mecula.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, we also had like the 31st Veteran Cup or Veteran Cup or Vet Cup.
Yeah.
And I saw you were there.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
You disappeared before I could talk to you, but you were there.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
The Vet Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Vet Cup at Weiterstadt.
Yeah, Weiterstadt. I like that. Reiner made sure I was there this year because he kept me updated on there. Efi also keeps me updated on a lot of things, so you know I try to be there and make it. But I like the BMX scene. I like the camaraderie here in Germany with everybody get together.
You like the vibe.
The vibe and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there this year, I walked around and seen a lot of history there. You know, see all the old bikes. The uniform.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
And,
even if you don't race, then, you don't have to.
Yeah.
You could if you wanted to, but you don't have to.
But the thing there, when I look at Weiterstadt, how the track changed,
oh, yeah.
And then you see how the sport itself changed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you know, you have, you had asphalt there now, where before it was a lot of dirt.
It's almost all asphalt.
All asphalt, yeah. And
clip in pedals.
Yeah, and you see how, you know, people are standing on the first turn, you know. Yeah,
super tall starting hills.
Yeah, yeah. And
how do you feel about the, I mean, I'm not going to say, to me it's a different sport, but how do you feel about the new BMX? Like if you compare it.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's what I have a lot of conversations about, you know. I don't know if I can really compare it, because I look at it now, it's racing. Back then, in the early days, it was BMX, you know.
It was motocross on bicycles.
It was, yeah, yeah. And now it's just, it looks like it's road racing to me.
It's track racing.
It's track racing, yes. Yeah. And I don't know even when you look at the riders, the conditioning of the riders, the bikes, when you look at a bike. Yeah.
Well, I think that's how you need to kind of dissect it, right? Yeah. Let's start with the uniforms. You compare the uniforms old to new.
Oh, my God.
There's no uniform I can say today that I would like to have it and think 10 years later it's still going to look nice or...
And I know this is going to be sort of disrespectful to some people out there, but if I just take the Olympic team of France,
yeah,
and I look at their BMX uniform, I go...
Mane and tights?
Yeah, white tights. And you kind of, I'm like, yeah, not mine.
No.
The huge helmets.
Yeah. And just all of that. And the thing I look at, that the bikes are just so expensive, you know? I mean...
I didn't feel like they were expensive when we rode, too.
Yeah.
If I compared the styles, I was like, today, a seat post is non-existent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until they exchange the seat post, and then it's just super existent, and it's more seat post than bike.
Bike, yeah.
And you kind of go, I don't, that to me is like.
Like you're talking about during races, right? In between races.
Yeah, yeah, so during the race, it's like not existent. Yeah. Is like
in
just
between
a seat
races,
in
it's like a 20 inch tall seat post.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it all has its purpose, and we probably would have done it too when we were young and we would have known.
Right.
I do think from like nourishment, physique, and all of that today, they're more advanced because of the internet and you just have more access. Like when we grew up, do you eat granola or noodles? I don't know. Like,
Whatever. But the thing
I just had a Pepsi in between races.
A Mountain Dew. But here's the thing, when I look at, when we was racing, I think our bodies and everything was more conditioned. So when you fail, the recovery, you know, you can take the
beating.
Yeah. And now these guys are falling.
Oh my God.
And they're injured for life a lot of times, you know? Mm-hmm. And we didn't see that back then.
No.
And I don't think the jumps are even bigger because, you know, we had more jumps back then. And
the starting hills weren't that tall.
Yeah.
And I think the speed, like if you look at it from a pro series, I think speed is there way more than we had it.
The speed is there, but it's pretty much as a straight line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when you look at the speed jumps, it's just all the rhythm section.
Pump track style.
Mm-hmm. And.
Yeah, honestly, like. That's where I always lose the rhythm section.
Yeah,
because it rides me, I don't ride it.
Sorry,
that's just...
So, and I think we pedaled more. I mean, our bodies was more in condition. I mean, they don't really pedal so much.
The skill set was just so different. The skill set you had to have.
Yeah.
But honestly, like I was looking at the sport, if you look at it neutrally today, the click pedals and so on, like that, they actually advanced the sport a bit because now they can fly sort of, they fly the shape of the jump when they jump.
Yeah,
you kind of go, how the hell?
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't do that. For us, it was always just like a curve. Mm-hmm. Today, they can like pump in the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things where I go, I get the benefit of the sport. Do I think it's as cool as we were? No.
I don't
think it's as stylish as we were?
No.
Nope.
No.
There's a lot of points where I just go, it's actually, to me, it's two different sports. And they need to be classified differently. I think we need a old school BMX league, and young people should compete in that as well.
I can see it coming.
I would hope that would come back. Coming. Yeah, and the biggest thing that with the sport, like with Ron have on Vans, You know, Vans was the trademark of the sport.
Northern Cal, I mean, especially Brent and Brian, they were on Nikes.
They were Nikes, yeah.
Because that's closer to Oregon.
Yeah. But I always liked the Van shoes, you know, the JT uniforms, the Harrell uniforms, you know, the 09. I mean, the colors and the team, everything represented you at the factory. You don't know who, and then with the bikes, all look the same.
I think what you're trying to say is back then, as a rider, you were instantly recognizable.
Yeah.
If you were sponsored by somebody, you were recognizable instantly.
Yeah.
Like, think of Torker. Thinking of Torker, you're thinking
black, yellow,
with some red.
Yeah.
Thinking of Redline, you were like red, black with white.
Yeah.
Thinking of GT, you're like yellow, blue, and some white.
Yeah.
And so on. Thinking of Patterson, you're like orange, blue, yellow, and some white.
Yeah.
See? So, I think that team riders are hardly recognizable anymore. I couldn't tell you of a single factory-sponsored BMX race team today.
No. Yeah.
I'm even worse. I can't tell you the bike brands.
Because
I kind of go, I've never heard of those bike brands, some of them. Where you go, what?
Well, that's even worse.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the same thing with me, because when I was there at Vitastar, I was walking around looking at the bikes, and I'm like...
The current bikes?
Yeah, and they all looked the same, and couldn't really
tell.
You're
like, what is this?
What is this, yeah. And there's nothing to distinguish the bike from anything. And
Well, even if they ride different bikes... Usually the teams are now, they're basically club teams.
Yeah,
so you have the Vitastar club team. They all have the same jersey on.
Oh, they do.
And you kind of look at it and you're like,
okay, it's
great to be sort of uniform. Yeah. At the same time, I think the way we were, this was more individual, right? Mm-hmm. You were, like, if I compare it with the Darmstadt or Vitastar crew, you had Baumet and Aki, who were like pro neck. I was Patterson.
Yeah.
Mark Streckler, always Redline, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like...
Right.
We were still in one team, in one club, but everybody was unique in their sense.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, that's gone for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, like I say, everything is a full circle. Everything eventually comes back around. Oh, yeah. And I think more people, when you're doing all these old school things and bringing the bikes back, and maybe it'll come back around, you know.
So we discussed Frogtown.
Yeah.
And you said... That's a big maybe. Yeah. What about the next Vet Cup? We would love to see you back on a bike. You too, by the way, Ryan. And we've mentioned it a couple of times.
Okay.
And I, like, just to both of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always admired you, both of you. You were my idols.
Thank you.
Mm. I always thought you had extreme speed and style. Mm-hmm. I thought you were had powerhouse and speed like crazy.
Yeah.
Then just this insecurity on the jump right. Like, I don't want to be next to him ever.
No,
because it just like don't mind me if saying this. I hope, but it just felt like Ronnie would have all the speed and power, and it was leading up to an explosion, and that was usually at the first jump.
That was me. Yeah.
No, but the great thing was like the explosion actually caused other people to fall, and you were still on the bike. You were kind of going like, "That's just I don't know how he does it, but it's just crazy."
That was me. That was always me, you know. And I have a photo from the California Cup, and I get the whole shot. It's me, Dennis Foster, Brian Patterson's on the right side of me with Larry Ruiz, Tinker Roy is in the middle, Brent Patterson. Yes. And if you see what happened after that, it was exactly that. It was that
disaster.
Big, yeah, you know.
Disaster strikes.
Yeah, yeah.
Disaster in the form of Ron Sampson.
Yeah. But the thing there is, you know, when we go in there, I remember so clearly, you know, Brent Patterson is talking to me like, "Ron, I'm on the outside of you," you know, like, warning me, like, don't do nothing.
Don't do nothing crazy.
Yeah, like, I'm on the outside of you.
And you were like, "I'm going to do something crazy."
Yeah, you know.
I'm going to fuck you up.
And that was, you know, I did say that was history, but okay. I've done that a lot. Yeah, and that's probably how I got the name Radical Ron, you know, and it has stuck with me all the way through. And, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I... I would like to, you know, and I have a Harrell. It's a, what year is it? I think it's a 2018, you know, and I ride that a lot.
20-inch or cruiser?
It's a 20-inch, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have a 20-inch or cruiser redline. And I would like to, I've been looking for a Patterson. I would like to ride a Patterson, you know, get the real feel of old school again, you know, mm-hmm. and see.
But, you can borrow mine.
Yeah. Yeah, okay,
I have
cool.
two now.
You got two?
I have the older version.
Yeah. Stevie's gonna let you trash.
Trash, yeah.
You're gonna trash it. But like, yeah. I honestly, I saw you trash people. I've never seen you trash bikes.
Yeah, yeah, no. Bend some wheels sometimes, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I would definitely next year I would come out, you know, and I even picked up some 7 gear, you know. So I got the equipment.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and I, you know, like I said, where I live at, I got a pump track. And I go out there and I ride a little bit and try to stay conditioned, but I will.
Well, in Vajdashtut, we have we basically have training every Thursday and Saturday.
Oh, it's Thursday. I thought it was Wednesday.
Thursday. That's also old school, so the old guys come out.
Okay.
We're always at 6.
Yeah.
6 in the evening.
On Thursdays, okay.
On Thursdays, always there.
Yeah.
Love to see you.
Okay. Gate starts?
If it works, yeah. If someone didn't, someone... Like this Thursday, someone unplugged it somehow, and we couldn't get it to go.
Yeah, see, that I didn't know. So it's Thursday. I always thought it was Wednesdays, you know? So Thursday, I might can make it. And that's every Thursday.
Basically every Thursday.
Yeah. Oh,
and
cool.
I'll join you up in our group, and then we'll see.
Yeah, that's great.
We have the race jams.
Yeah. We also have the race jams.
Yeah.
That's next Saturday, right? We have the next one.
Okay. And it's also all this in Vajdashtut, no?
That is in Vajdashtut.
Yeah. Okay.
Comes a lot of guys from around.
Yeah.
Okay. Some maybe Stuttgart, Karlsruhe.
Nice.
Yeah.
Karlsruhe.
Do you know?
Okay.
Kinsler?
I heard you.
Ich kenne ihn, aber ich kenne viele vom Namen, aber vom
English, please.
Also, yeah.
The Dutchies are gonna go what?
No, they
all speak German.
Yeah. But I mean, I've been in Germany a long time. I never know how good my German is. You know, sometimes I can speak, sometimes I can't speak. You know, but.
Dude, your German's good.
Yeah,
like, you write it perfectly. Like, that's where I was thinking.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Oh. Thank you.
Yeah. Bitte schön.
Yeah.
Bitte schön.
Jawohl, mein Herr.
Yeah. But see, like, everybody understands me when I speak to my wife. She's like, I don't understand you. maybe.
So all denjenigen Offiziellen vom Bund Deutscher Radfahrer, wir lieben euch.
Yeah.
There you go. Back to Ronnie.
Okay. Yeah, the BDR is like BMX verboten here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me and
just Ronnie verboten here.
Yeah, me and the BDR, that was like, wow. You know, so.
And then so like, today.
At one point, I just like, okay, I'm not making no money. Yeah.
Just let it go.
Just let it go, yeah, and stuff, so.
I hear you.
Yeah.
So what are you doing today? Like, what's...
Well,
what's a Ronnie day look like?
Right now, I'm settling into retirement.
Yeah.
I have a small...
From my mindset, I'm the same. I just need to pay a few more bills. But
No, I have a small little shop that I prepare cars for the Americans that are going back to the States. You know, I detail them up. And I do that maybe like 2 or 3 times a week. But pretty much, I get up at 11...
So you're saying not all of them abandon their cars when they leave?
That's a different story. I have some abandoned cars that they have.
I thought so.
But yeah, I'm slowly going into retirement. You know, I have younger kids. I have a daughter that's 18. I have a son that's 14. And I try to spend as much time with them. I have a little dog to spend some time with.
Life is short.
And... I'm looking at for my next chapter and stuff. Maybe I come back and concentrate just on BMX racing again. You know, who knows? But
let's make BMX racing cool again.
Yeah. And like I say, it's a sport that you.
Let's make BMX motocross again.
Yeah, make it dirty. You know.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I would like to see. But I don't. I have a pretty easy life right now. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So, did a lot of things that I wanted to do.
Widerrufen, abbrechen.
Yeah.
So my the actual host keeps giving me questions that I need to ask.
Also,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Ronnie, sorry.
Yes.
But we definitely need two 80s songs that we need to provide for our playlist.
Two 80s?
So two songs from the 80s that really meant something to you, that moved you. And then please give us a little story to each of the songs.
Wow.
And Rainer, we need the same from you.
Okay.
From the
I'm 80s. Thinking about it right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Let's have
I think
Ronnie
I already
go first,
got two
though.
In yeah. my mind.
From the 80s.
Yeah.
Oh.
My precious little diamond.
Yeah. From the 80s, you know, when you talk
got
about...
got fond memories of the 80s.
Yeah,
though,
when you talk about the thing with the 80s, and this might be a little bit weird, but in the 80s, my music was country.
Okay. Oh, man, I thought he was going to say that. I'm like,
yeah,
Ronnie is the least person I would put into a country song.
But no. So there you have it.
There you go. Let's hear it.
I love
Kenny Loggins.
No, Kenny Loggins wasn't country, you know? But I have a lot of music from the country. I like Willie Nelson from the beginning, mm-hmm. The Statler Brothers from the beginning. I came into hip-hop music in the 90s, you know? Mm. So,
okay.
That's gonna really be interesting for the playlist. So, yeah. There you go, Willie Nelson.
Yeah, Willie Nelson, and
any specific song of Willie Nelson that you would go is your favorite?
Garth Brooks. Oh, now Garth Brooks. That kid, he wasn't the 80s, but Garth Brooks was my biggest
music
fan,
legend.
And Kenny Chesney, the Oak Ridge Boys. And Willie Nelson, I had to say from the 80s, would be my songs that I listen to all the time, you know. And you listen to the country music radio station out of there, but I can't say any particular song. But anything from the Oak Ridge Boys or Willie Nelson, I would have to say was my go-to song.
So weird.
Yeah,
but
and
good.
Then. And then even when you go, I think with the 80s, because hip-hop came more in the 90s for me. But yeah, it was country music was my...
Two songs.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Maybe I had to Google them, see. But yeah, Willie Nelson and the Oak Ridge Boys, what were their top songs back then? Okay. Those was the, you know, you play any of the songs, that was like, it instantly... cue a memory, and I'm like, yeah, that was it, because I remember, like, 80s, you know, white t-shirt, ripped up jeans, and maybe I had a hat, you know, a trucker hat or something, and that was life was beautiful.
Well, I thought Northern Cal is probably going to be more like rockish kind
yeah,
of, you know,
Peter,
that was 80s. Just
yeah,
was...
Peter Frampton. I like Peter Frampton. But, you know, like I said, a friend of mine, Ronnie McClinton, his father was a country music. I remember going there. They always had country music in the background. Another friend of mine, it was the Acres. Go over their house. It was always country music. And so I grew up listening to country music, you know. And we'd
That's
be in
awesome.
The back of the truck. I remember the one family, Acres, they had... an old 56 Ford truck, mm-hmm. and we'd go to baseball practice, football practice, everything in the back of the truck, listening to the radio. So, but let's see, the 80s.
But again, hey,
You sent me two songs.
Yeah, let's say hee haw to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah. I love it because it actually gives a little bit of. Versatility and color to mm-hmm. the
yeah.
playlist, which mm-hmm. has been very sort of European,
yeah,
sort of pop songs, if we're honest, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
a little bit of hip hop. Rainer, here we go.
Two songs only? Because I got a full list of 80s.
No,
we'd
love to hear like the two songs okay. and with the
well,
best,
two
best
songs
story.
That really pop into my mind thinking of the 80s is. Well, that's just a random pick here, but yep. I kind of like Duran Duran, Hungry Like a Wolf. That's one of my favorite. And the other one is not close to this. It's more late 70s, but I only got to listen to it in the 80s. It's Van Halen, and I think the song's name is... Hold on, let me look it up. Ain't Talking About Love. That's one of my all-time favorites.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Good.
So those two, just a random pick.
What I love about the 80s songs, I can sing along. I love that.
Today's Everybody
songs,
can.
I'm always yeah. like,
yeah. by heart.
Yeah. yeah.
No idea.
Of course.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Same here.
Okay.
Are we good? Anything you want to let our audience know, Ronnie? Just any wisdom? What did BMX do to your actual sort of your life?
Anything you want to get off your chest?
As a person, personality?
Even to your haters?
Oh, wow, no. But no, I have to say, this could be a little bit deep, I guess. But BMX, to me, I think it saved my life in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, like I grew up in the city where I grew up in, single mother. I had brothers and everything.
How many brothers?
I had four brothers.
Okay, younger
one
or older?
One they was all older. Well, I had one brother that was younger, which came over here with me. And then the other one was younger, and I mean, he came over here with me.
Are all of them still around?
They're all still around. My younger brother, he passed away in 2013. No. That's who we started the business with over here.
Damn.
But BMX, it kept me from going down the wrong path.
I see. It did that to a lot of people.
Yeah, and it gave me a friend, you know, connection, friends that I still have
mm-hmm.
all over the world. You know, I have people.
That's
and,
a good thing.
Yeah, and the connection that I have with these people, they all came from BMX,
okay.
you know? And wow. That's something that...
So you're saying you owe BMX in a way?
Of course, See. Of course. I don't think anyone...
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't think anyone...
That's where we're going to Frogtown.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I would have to make it there. But yeah, I think that was a sport that came along.
So it kind of like shaped you in a way. Too,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
And here's what I have to say, and I get into a lot of different conversations on a lot of things. With being, especially being over here in Germany as well, it's a valid point. BMX is the only sport that I have ever been connected with that never determined anybody by race or color or anything
never.
Like that. Never, you know? And it was, you was a BMXer, you was good, mm-hmm. you was a freestyle, you was
you
good.
You could jump the triple?
Yeah, and that was it.
No,
you know?
Matter what color you are, if your parents were poor or rich, no matter what car they drove,
did not matter.
No matter what religion anybody was.
Yeah.
This guy, he could jump the triple.
Yeah, and that's it.
He could not.
So and
there you have it.
And the thing, like, when I came over to Germany, mm-hmm. and I started racing, and, like, the first day I met you, I was American. It was never that, he was a black American. It was just American. Like, on all the covers of BMX Action Magazine, it never was like, it's a black person on the cover or a Chinese person. It never mattered. Never came up mm-hmm. in the sport. And you have in all the other sports, you know, you have the first Asian, the first this, first that. And BMX have never addressed any race issues, never anything like that.
You know, we never thought about it back in the day. Yeah. I never did, I can assure you that. We measured people by, this guy, he's cool.
Yeah.
This guy, he's not cool, he's aggressive.
Yeah. And
but it didn't matter where you came from, what color you were, what religion, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It just mattered if you were cool or if you were an a-hole.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
I also think like the sport itself, like just the love for the sport already put you in a place where you knew that that's a connection you have mm-hmm. together.
Yeah, to connect. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's just...
Instantly.
Yeah.
Totally.
And you watch develop, you know, because like when freestyle came on racing and you watch the person from his first race, you watch him get better, you watch him improve, and you watch him do, like you say, they can clear the doubles, clear the triples, and it was all about, you know, making everybody good, you know? And I like that. And every time when I talk to someone about the sport, it's just about the sport. The friendship is about the friendship that you develop. It never comes into... We never talk about world issues or politics or anything like that.
You want it?
Hey.
I don't.
Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't matter. And it never mattered. And like I said, when I'm here in Germany and the friends that I met, it's always just been, you know, hey, I'm Ryan, you're Ryder. And it never mattered about anything. And everywhere I go, if I go to France, I'll go to Amsterdam, it's just, we're just humans. We're just guys that race BMX. We're just guys that like bikes. And it's, yeah, and it's always respecting. Like when you say, when some people are an asshole or they was good as a
dickheads,
you still show them the courtesy and respect.
Yes.
And stuff. And
you
and
still showed them the courtesy and respect, but I learned to like stay away from
you. Stay, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But it was always respect. And you don't see any trash talking. No. And I mean, and I like that it. Too.
Like we had, like
it's the, internal. I think
they
internal.
Read some magazines. Like I remember Sven Lawa. He would always like trash talk me before the start.
Yeah,
he'd always be in my ear and go blah blah blah. Yeah. I trained and I did this, and then I'm like, whatever. Yeah. Like. You can have the win.
It was a respect in that, you know, like that and stuff. And that's what I like. And then, like, over the years, it's still, you know, we see people, we talk about the sports, we talk about some of the things we did, but it's just, race or nothing never matters.
No, and it's the love for the sport. Like, that's still, the thing that matters.
And that's
like,
and that's what you see when we, you know, we all talk about the sport, and you see we all have the love for the sport. We want the sport to continue. We want to get better. I mean, my thing is I have a lot of conversation with a lot of people in the U.S. about it. Why isn't BMX able to support a family, you know, like a
anymore.
Professional ride? Anymore, yeah. Mm-hmm. When you look at, they should be, you know, they're in the Olympics, you know, so it should be a pro rider that could be able to say he's a professional BMX rider and make a normal living supporting his.
I agree, but you see that that's not just BMX, right? That you can take that to a lot of sports. If you look at the European sort of sports, just go to Germany, how many of those track and field athletes can't live from what they're doing?
Yeah.
So they're all part of the German Bundeswehr, the army they get paid to do sport, but they're not really a pro athlete, but, if you want, in that sense. And that just kind of, like, I think in general, sport from a paying and so on point of view, you have, you know, football, you have all those.
Well, soccer, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, global football. I never call it soccer. I think
that's. Yeah, but it's still soccer.
And then you have American football, you have basketball. All of those sports pay really well.
Yeah.
You have tennis pays really well.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you get into sort of those niche sports and
kayaking.
Is yeah. Tell me about a kayaker who makes like $100K.
Zero.
Yeah, that's the point, right? You kinda go that's where BMX unfortunately is right now.
Yeah,
it's
but
a
when
niche
you
sport.
Yeah, but when you look at that, I mean you look at what it takes to become a professional BMX rider, you know?
It's a long and bumpy road.
Yeah. So why can't it support someone's lifestyle? Why can't it be, you know, I mean, when you look at Red Bull, look at their participation in it. I mean, that's a large global sponsorship.
Yes.
So that can, if you got Red Bull, you know, you take all these other corporations, it could support. I mean, when you look at Supercross, they're professional athletes as well. And pretty much the same condition goes into racing a motorcycle to racing a BMX bike, and you know, look at the track condition. So it should be able to, you know. I mean, I would think the top 10, top 20 professional riders should be able to sustain a lifestyle. And if we ever establish that, then I think the sport is going to grow bigger and better and things of that nature, you know. And then, like I said, I came in 72 with the sport. And you look at how it advanced, but at the same time,
the pay has dropped.
The pay has dropped.
Yeah, big
and
time.
Stuff. You know? And
well, if you again, you just look at it, and there's always this debate about women's soccer and men's soccer, the debate about the pay.
Yeah.
But if you look at the stadium fill rate, and you look at the media coverage. That's where that comes from.
It's way and
then
off
you just,
balance.
Then you just need to understand that. Hey, I'm only. With my sport, it's a different sport. I pull this many people into media.
We're talking about coverage.
Yeah. And if you don't have that, corporations are not going to pay as much, right? That's just the point. If they know you have the coverage, if they know there's a lot out there, then obviously they're willing to pay. So I'm kind of like, I get what you're saying, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm realist going, fuck, that's not...
It's not going to happen.
But you got ESPN covering... skateboard
or
competition, X
Games.
X Games. you know, why BMX racing?
Well, because for some reason BMX racing never ever got the coverage like X Games.
Yeah.
Like freestyle.
Yeah.
You know, never did.
It's just not as extreme. Like, that's the thing, right? You look at it, it's pretty quick, it's fast. Mm-hmm. And for the people doing it, like if you're a participant in that race,
it's exciting.
Is super exciting. For people on the outside, they kind of look at it, and then
it's
especially
super boring after a while.
Well, especially if you look at the, like, I think the pro section is great because people have to jump. But there was this trend sort of late 90s where, and unfortunately, that's exactly where modern BMX went. Is it became super technical and everything had to be, you know, close to the ground and you pushed everything.
Super even, like a super highway.
Yeah. Makes it very, very uninteresting and uninspiring for the spectators.
For an outside spectator.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They look at it and go, what's happening? Mm-hmm. These guys are going.
Yeah, they watch it for 5 minutes and then change the channel. Yeah.
But this is where I always attack the USA BMX, and I call them out
formerly
ABA, and I tell them, I believe I have the remedy to change that, to improve it, you know. And I think these guys are just collecting a paycheck, you know. They're making more money sitting in the office as staff than these guys out there that's racing BMX.
Should be the other way around.
It should be the other way around, you know.
Well, and compare it with football, soccer.
Yeah,
you see that, right?
And I constantly calling them out, and I'm always being blocked on these groups and things. And if they, I tell them, I say, fly me to the States, have one meeting with me, and I can revive the sport, and I can bring the sport back to where it should be, the glory of it, you know, and get it as close as possible. Mm-hmm. But they're afraid of that. They're afraid of that, you know, and stuff. And then, you know, and no disrespect to him, but, you know, and everybody likes Stu Thompson. Everybody likes Stu Thompson. You know, he's been the ambassador of the sport. Yeah. But when you look at, here we are in 2025, and they still have him as the ambassador of the sport, you know?
Okay.
That's
sad.
Sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sad.
That you don't have, not for Stu, like, don't get me wrong.
No, I'm saying, it's nothing against Stu. That
there's no one who could follow those footsteps and kind of be the face today.
Yeah.
I see.
Why not, though? And, you know, and they totally missed it, and then they're not. Anyway, that's, I would say that conversation for them, but, you know, I believe.
So you're saying they should be willing to reinvest way more money into the sport?
No, I'm saying that they should bring me to the table and let me reestablish the sport.
Let you turn them upside down.
Yeah, yeah, you know, because I mean, I've looked at everything, and I really believe that I can
turn it upside down.
Yeah, turn it upside down, and bring the sport in. You know,
well, that's a valid point.
Yeah, yeah,
but I doubt that's ever going
to
happen.
I doubt as well. But if I go to Frogtown, I would make it happen. I would. That would be my.
Well, let's go.
Yeah,
I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm going to. So you're going to.
Well, I'm in the situation. My son's going to Chico, California.
Oh, okay.
To play soccer and study.
Yeah.
So I'm. He's leaving this month.
Yeah.
And I'm just
going
to go up there to kind of. It matches, right? You kind of go to Frog Town.
Yeah, yeah.
Go down there or up and buy him a car. So he's like, you know, and then fly back. Like, that's basically my purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your mission.
That's my mission.
I see. Well, Ron's and my mission is to go to Frogtown and meet old people.
And I'd love that, right? Especially because you guys, you know them.
Yeah.
I don't. I'd love to live, especially meet the Pattersons. Like, I'm always a big fan, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, let's meet there, guys.
Yeah. So the 9th September. Okay.
It's 11th. 11, 12, 13 September.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to have to
reschedule.
And with that, guys, I'm going to thank you for this, you know, podcast and being here. Superb. Anything that you want to say? Last word?
No. No, I had a great time. Yeah, it was a great time. And
we're still having a great time.
Yeah, we're going to continue
having
a great time.
That's what got us here today.
Yeah.
Radical.
But it just, you know, bringing up, like, say, the friendship and the history. And
the friendship lasts forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
And like I said before, this will be my final word.
Yeah.
Like, when we got here, you said we met the second time this year, which is true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even if we hadn't met for 10 years,
yeah,
wouldn't we continue at the point where we left off?
And that's how it always been. It always,
exactly.
Yeah, it
no
always
matter like how that. Much time has yeah, passed,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're still going to be at eye level with, yeah, with each other, no matter what we did in
yeah,
between.
Yeah.
We just continued where we left off the time
yeah,
before.
And as if no time had passed.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's have always been with BMX. It always
exactly,
has been that way, you know.
Which is people, a good thing.
Which is a beautiful thing.
And again, to both of you, you're very welcome to join us for the old school jam.
Okay.
I will
next weekend,
there.
Right?
Next weekend, next yeah.
And yeah, for any training that we do along the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
That said, there's no peer pressure. That's the thing that I love about
okay,
us being at the age that we're in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you don't pressure yourself anymore. The only
we
peer
have
pressure.
To be careful.
No,
yeah, we don't fall like we used to.
I know we. No, you just no. Now you fall like a sack.
Oh,
I know
yeah,
and it hurts.
Don't remind
and,
me of it.
And also, it doesn't hurt for just a couple of minutes.
Yeah,
it hurts for a couple
know,
of days, weeks.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, nobody actually puts you under pressure,
okay,
yeah,
except yourself.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah,
where sometimes, like, I'm in that zone where I know I need to progress.
Yeah.
I need to grow a pair.
Yeah.
Because
oh, okay,
if you don't, you're not going to jump the double. And
yeah,
I'm like, with that, the mind just kind of plays tricks on you. There's too much shit going on where you go.
Yeah.
If then, so
yeah,
that's my last word to this. Love to the brand, love to BMX.
Thank
yeah,
you very
love
much.
Love to BMX, yeah, definitely.
Riders Ready. Der Oldschool BMX Podcast.